Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. My name is Tim Hetty, and as usual, I've got my friend Rod Fox over here. How's it going?
Tim, the weather is changing.
It's supposed to really start changing here pretty soon, from what I hear.
You know, I don't know if we're going to jump right to the cool weather, right into snow, but...
I hope we do.
Yeah, you know.
It's better for snowmobiling.
Well, that, and we sure could use a little bit of moisture.
Yeah,
I mean, I know there's guys out in the field now that are just like, hey, listen, it hasn't rained. We might as well just let us go. But you know what? We still need moisture.
Yeah, we do. Actually, I think it's important to get that fall rain for the spring planting season anyways. So.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be helpful, you know, just for the soil conditions around our house.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, how many normal bridges have you gone over and you knew that this is a, you know, a creek or a river that has always
it's
been
dry.
Full? And it's dry. You're looking down at ATV tracks that are – I can't tell you the number of creeks and rivers that I normally have never seen the bottom. And
well,
they're absolutely bone dry.
That's right. And even, you know, if you're on 3580, you know, where the two rivers meet, you know, on the north side of the interstate there, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculously low.
Yeah, I've never seen areas, some of these areas, well, you know, if you go over Highway 17 north of Granger, you look at, you know, the Des Moines River coming down, and it's this narrow little channel. It's not, you know, it's not the big boating area as it drains into Sailorville.
Well, I mean, it's we're in the worst drought in 80-plus years.
People have to understand.
Tell me.
You know, and most people are this way. I mean, if it's 80 years, maybe somebody who's 100 could go, yep, I remember when it was like that. But, you know, the majority of us, no one has ever experienced this kind of lack of moisture. And as a homeowner, like you and I are, we, you know, when you start seeing things, you have to be aware that the soil conditions, you know, are a major cause of foundation failure going right now.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I've got some – we're actually going to do some questions that people have emailed us today.
Right.
And these have been stacking up on my desk for a long time. So some of what I've got here is kind of a compilation of different questions. But a lot of it has to do with foundation issues.
Right.
And some of the things we've been talking about lately on this show concerning that.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, if you want to send us your comments or questions, or you want us to cover a certain subject for you on the show, we're happy to do that.
Right.
Just get on MidwestBasementSystems.com, and I believe you go down to the About Us section and then go to the radio show. And yeah, I'm getting on there now. Go to the radio show, and right there, there's a place for you to leave your comments.
Yep.
And, you know, please send us your questions and comments.
Right.
That really is where we get most of the subjects for this show.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of great questions of listeners that have been, you know, listening of recent. So we'll be able to get to some of those.
Now, one of the things I talked about last week was I could not remember Gary Hull's company, which is Fresh Start by Prompt Care, and he does not sponsor this show at this point, so we're not going to give him a lot of time. But I did tell you that I would find out who that was because I could not remember, and I apologize about that. But Gary Hull from Prompt Care, Iowa, and what they do is they get rid of odors and make your house nice and fresh again.
Right, on a molecular level.
Right.
Which is, you know, fascinating to me because I'm always into the kind of the newer...
Well, and you and I are somewhat skeptics anyways, so people really have to prove to us and explain their science. And he did. He came in and he explained it to us. And I do want to specify, though, that if you have mold, if you have smells and odors and stuff in your house, that's because of something.
Right.
There's
an
underlying issue, and you have to find the underlying issue.
Gary
even
agrees
Gary,
with us.
Yeah, Gary would agree
with
that.
Yeah, it's, hey, this is kind of the outgoing process. It's like we're taking care of the moisture, we're taking care of the mold source. Now let's create a healthy environment for you.
Now, and he's got a really great product. Now, we did, the following week after he was on, we did kind of bash an entire industry that had to do with...
I have a question about that.
Okay, well, hold on to that.
So, yeah.
Hold on to that. But we did kind of bash an entire industry that has to do with ozone generation, and I did kind of put it out there that if anybody had any contrary beliefs or science or anything to back up their industry... to please let me know, and I have not.
I was going to say, Tim, is the phone ringing off the hook with people who are willing to challenge our story?
I'm there 6 days a week, every single week, so and I've not heard anything. I've not had any emails or anything. So
it's kind of a silent.
But their science, in my view, is flawed, and I'm still putting it out there that if anybody has ozone generators or
air exchangers.
I'd like to see their science. I'd like to have them back it up. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and we'll let them on the show to make their case.
Right.
But they got to make their case to me and you first.
Right.
So with that being said, let's jump right into these questions because I know we're not going to get through nearly what we want to get
through.
Well,
I'm going to pose – this was not so much of a question, but it was a comment that was left to us. I heard us talk about air exchangers, and I have my furnace in my crawl space.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there you go. And it made sense to me not to force the air out of my crawl space. Thanks for the info. So, you've got an actual utility device, and you're going to depressurize the crawl space. And you and I see them all the time. People, builders will put, if there's enough space and room, they're trying to maximize the upstairs space by not having – a furnace in a closet.
And I've seen 100 furnaces in crawl spaces.
Right. So, and certain areas of the country, we'll see furnaces up in the attics. It's just, here in the Midwest where, some builders have decided that they can maximize, space upstairs, maximize usable living space, they put the furnaces downstairs. And it's put into a vented dirt crawl space.
And let me explain that just a little bit, what's actually happening here. Okay, our furnace, our HVAC system, furnace, air conditioner, ventilation, is designed to basically change the temperature of air.
Right.
Okay. People could kind of make the case where it's designed to actually condition the air. I don't particularly feel that way. I think it's horribly inefficient for conditioning. It's designed to change the temperature of the air.
Right.
If we put it down in a vented crawl space, what we're trying to do is vent the crawl space and move air through the crawl space.
Right.
So we've got our furnace down there, and on those really cold days where it's, say, zero, and I know Rod at your house, every year it gets down to zero.
Yep.
Here's your furnace and your HVAC system sitting down in the crawl space trying to battle that and heat the air in your home and go through ductwork, which is probably uninsulated. And so it's losing so much heat by the time it leaves that furnace to the time it comes up through your air duct that most of the time these furnaces will run continually.
Right.
And never really make your home comfortable.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I think people should understand is when furnaces are built, they're never intended to be exposed to the environmental conditions that a crawl space has.
Yep.
When you have that kind of moisture, I mean, Tim, we see it all the time, they're rusting out.
Oh, crazy.
There's condensation typically always somewhere. And so not only is it dangerous to have what should be a great piece of equipment in your home into this unconditioned environment because – now you're drawing in all these respiratory irritants into and around the furnace, and guess what? You're spitting it throughout your house.
Yeah,
you're taking these environmental conditions that you wouldn't want to have, that you want to have isolated and encapsulated from you, and you're recirculating it. So
and it's impossible to have a crawl space without having mold.
Right.
Okay. So I think we just need to clear the air right there. I haven't really had a lot of people arguing with the fact that crawl spaces are bad, but everybody has a different opinion on how to fix that crawl space, including the city. The city's got this opinion where you need to ventilate them. It's just stupid.
Yeah, and that's just it. So, if you do have a crawl space and you do have a your furnace down in there, please give us a call. Let us explain to you how, we're going to make your home and your environmental conditions in your house so much better. One of the things else is that, we're probably going to save you on the lifespan of replacing that furnace because, those environmental conditions that are around that are not how a manufacturer was intending to have that that furnace put.
So did this homeowner, did they want you to come out and take a look, or did they just call
and say
thanks? No,
it was just a comment. It was just thanks for the info. It made sense not to force the air out of my crawl space because when we talked about depressurizing, they were worried because it's a gas furnace. So, all of a sudden, now what am I doing to my family if I don't have the correct pressure? And again, furnace systems are sized by, you know, the type of home, and you start taking inadequate air around that environment, guess what you can have? You can have CO2 poisoning. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, gravity appliances are gravity appliances, and you better make sure that the pressures are right. You're 100% correct on that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I've seen people do things in their basements that change the pressure.
Right.
Without even thinking about the consequences.
Right.
You know, and hey, let's face it, it's not everybody's job, but whoever installed certain products should have been thinking about that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
To me, it kind of, you know, boy, this guy's opening himself up for a lot of liability.
Yeah, that's just it. And, you know, so many people are the do-it-yourselfers, you know, they'll tap into either a duct line or they'll put another cold air return on, and they don't realize that they're taking the hopefully nice sized unit, and they're throwing some variables into it that are going to make your furnace not operate as efficiently.
Right.
So, I mean, you want to make sure that you have a professional who understands what he's doing come out and do the work on your furnace.
Yep. Hey, we got to get to a break real quick. We'll be right back with more around the house. We have a number of more questions that by you, the homeowners, so please stay tuned. Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and this week we're just we're going through some questions and comments that people have given us. And please, again, if you have feedback for us, just go to MidwestBasementSystems.com, go to the About Us section, go down to the radio show part, and in there's a place where you can leave us your comments and questions. And again, that's where we base most of our shows. Unless, of course, there's just something Rod particularly wants to talk about, then we don't base it on what you guys want to talk about. Some burning topic, yeah. You know, and you at home or in your car or whatever, you know, you should feel lucky that I don't just give Rod free reign of this show. It would become a political show mainly about...
Yeah, that's right. Wasn't there a presidential debate last week?
Yeah.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah, we try to stay away from that and talk about your home. Okay, I got a question here. Looks like my front stoop is disintegrating, you know, and they're talking about the concrete blocks underneath the concrete slab.
Yeah.
And they want to replace it. They want to know what they should do so that this doesn't happen again.
Well, I guess, first off, stoops are a stupid idea.
Well,
it starts off, you know, there was a design back in the 50s and 60s, even into the 70s, but you don't see that many open stoops. And what I'm saying open is when you go downstairs, you can actually stand underneath the front door cap.
Underneath the concrete slab. Yeah, people want to use it for a closet
right,
or whatever.
I mean, yeah, I don't know who decided that was a wonderful idea, but you have an environment that is exposed above. We see water leaks in it all the time. People are like, hey, what should we do? And majority of the time we end up blocking them in. Because, you know, there's just no positive way to absolutely guarantee a seal on that concrete cap. A lot of times they're cracked. I mean, if they're exposed to a lot of moisture.
Well, and it's only a 4-inch slab. It's going to crack.
It's going to crack.
Here we are in Iowa.
Yeah, and with, you know, heavy rain on it or consistent rain on it, water's going to find a path of least resistance in. So most of the time nowadays when you see on the newer builds, if there's a front porch or a stoop or something like that, it's not an open stoop. It's you know, it goes down about 4 feet on the outside. Sure, it's capped for the design, but it's not accessible from your basement. So,
what we end up with a lot of times is one of two things is happening there, and more than likely it's because of the salt we're throwing on there.
Right.
You know, in the wintertime, concrete blocks are really not the strongest things on the planet, okay? They're a good building material. They're cheap. They're accessible. That's why everybody uses them. Anybody can replace concrete blocks. Anybody can build a wall with concrete blocks. It doesn't take any – I mean, and I don't want to make light of the industry. It does take skilled labor to do it efficiently.
It's actually becoming a lost art. I mean, you're not seeing a lot of homes being built with blocks. So, you know, the commercial industry still has a lot of very well-trained individuals, but – yeah, you as Joe homeowner, you know, you may want to ask somebody who's done it before.
Right, you know, and, you know, you can fake your way through it.
But, yeah.
You know, but a lot of times when we're throwing that salt down on our front stoop, the snow melts off and that water runs down. It gets on these concrete blocks and it just starts disintegrating.
Right.
You know, drive down the street. Any street you're on, you can find at least one front stoop that the concrete blocks are deteriorated and falling apart, and you know they just look horrible, and they do need to be replaced. If I was going to give advice on it, I would say go ahead and replace them with concrete block.
Yeah.
But The underlying issue here is the salt.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, depending on how old the house is, we used to mix a lot of fly ash in with our concrete blocks. Fly ash had its own set of problems because you got minerals in there that break down the block and, you know, they don't last forever.
Right.
But my advice would be to use sand instead of salt.
Yeah,
and if
absolutely.
You're worried about tracking it in, it doesn't make any difference. Sand or salt, what's your
yeah.
poison?
It's, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, and that's just it. We see a lot of that disintegration. Typically, the mortar is the first thing that breaks down. But, yeah, you're right, with a block with the fly ash in it, I mean, it looks like the block itself is pitting out.
I don't know how many times you've seen this in a basement itself.
Yeah, you do. And it's a lot of it's because of the minerals that come through from mm-hmm. the soil that's moist. And as it dries from the interior side of your home, you can see efflorescence. But, you know, you just start rubbing your fingers on that block, and all of a sudden it just kind of
starts falling apart,
turning to powder. So,
you know, and to kind of describe how horrible the salt is for our concrete, I mean, even when the city or the state or the DOT puts rebar in concrete, they purposely use an epoxy-coated rebar so that the minerals can't get down there and hopefully get right on the metal. Now, right. It does, and it rusts out.
Yeah, eventually it does break
but,
through.
But when we pull our car into the garage and mm-hmm. the big hunks of salt we like to kick off of the car and just leave them on the floor, well, then those hunks of salt and ice, they melt off, and that water runs over by the foundation,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's an attached garage. And then once that water runs over by the house, it starts to absorb in our concrete blocks. It absorbs all the way into the basement and starts breaking those concrete blocks down.
Right.
And a lot of times this is what we see. At Midwest Basement Systems, we replace a lot of block walls.
Yes, we do.
We actually have some pretty good people that do that.
Yeah, very well.
But it's not our favorite work. If I can give you some advice that saves you from that later and it costs me a concrete block job, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. I got a question here. I have a floor that's sinking in the center of my home. I was told I could possibly have a plumbing leak under my floor. Is this actually possible?
You're talking about the concrete basement floor.
Concrete basement floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but.
But. Yeah, anything is possible.
Yeah.
I would say if you've got a plumbing leak, you probably are seeing other signs of moisture. And,
right.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty obvious problem to diagnose.
I would say with the current weather pattern that we have been seeing with the soil shrinkage,
mm-hmm.
I'm a betting man on this one to say that I think we would steer you towards looking at as being soil shrinkage with the slab settlement.
Right. And, not to cut you off, Rod, but you're still within that zone of influence,
right.
Okay? And from the surface of the ground down about 18 feet, and you know, it's influenced by our weather patterns.
Right.
This year's been so horrible. My guess is it goes a lot further than that.
Right.
You know, so it's easy to understand why dry weather actually affects all the way underneath your basement floor.
Right. So. You know, and depending on how the layout, of your house is, are you built into the side of the hill? I mean, has the water over the years kind of helped wash out underneath the slab? We've seen it a lot with garages that don't have a deep footing. They're just built typically on a slab with maybe a monolithic style footing
mm-hmm.
Because there's not a lot of weight there. They didn't go down the full 42 inches. That rainwater can wash out from underneath the slab and the footing. And, depending on the design style and how the water, mitigates itself from around the sides of your house, or if it ponds kind of in the front, you know, there's a possibility of the excessive moisture having washed out in certain areas. Now, that may have happened in the past. Now you've got extreme soil shrinkage. So you may have been, being affected for a couple of different reasons. But, you know, if you want to make sure that you don't have a plumbing leak, you know, with water, make sure you get a qualified plumber out there to check
right.
it. If you think, and we've seen this before too, if you think you've got a sewage line that's broken and for some unknown reasons causing some issues, obviously you would probably smell the odors. But, you know, have somebody who's trained in that, who can scope
those lines. Well, that's the thing. They can run a camera right down through
right.
there, and you know, it's expensive. It's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks, and I'm not quoting prices. We don't do
yeah.
that, so I'm not sure how much it would cost, but I would venture to say it's around a couple hundred bucks.
Sure.
You know, and you might say, well, I don't want to do that. I mean, they're not really fixing anything. Well, it's true, but at the same time, they're probably going to save you at least a couple hundred bucks in figuring out what the issue is right away.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, last but not least, you know, have us out. We'll check for the settlement, sure, the soil shrinkage, and quote you for the repair necessary, because nothing is more damaging than foundation issues to your home. Nothing is more damaging.
Right. Nothing sucks the value out of your house more than that.
Exactly.
And, you know, it could be as simple as maybe your floor itself is inadequate.
Right.
You know, anytime you see the middle of a basement floor just settling, usually means thin floor.
Right. You go into some of these homes that are 80, 90 years old, probably didn't have a basement floor originally when it was built. It may have been dug out in the 40s, and then somebody came down and thought, well, we'll have a cellar down here to put our fruits and preserves and all that kind of stuff. And so they decided, well, let's put some concrete down. Well, they did this as an afterthought. It was, you know, so they're not walking on dirt. But, you know, the consistency and the design style was not intended like it is now, where your basement floor is a true integral part of the structure to hold your walls from shearing in at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a real design need for a basement floor. So
Yeah, it's part of the structure. And one of the things that we try to get through on this show is that, you know, everything – you have to think of your house – as a complex machine,
right,
built of systems, okay? And, you know, it has to do with the building science, the structure, the strength of the soil around it, the studded walls, the windows, everything, HVAC, everything works together to make things happen in your house. And if one thing's out of whack, you know, there you
it
go.
It throws a lot of other things. I mean, just one single vented dirt crawl space affects your whole house.
Yeah, everything is out the window.
House. Right.
We got another break coming up on us here real quick, and we're going to cover some more things when we get back, so don't go nowhere. All righty, welcome back, Guy. We're listening to Around the House, and today we're just covering some topics that you, the homeowners, have sent in to us, and please keep them coming. We always like it. You know, if you think we're doing a great job, you know, tell us. If you don't, tell us that
too.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you could be wrong if you want. So,
yeah.
Anyways, okay, I have a question here about gutters. I need new gutters. The ones I have run over. What size or what is the recommended size? Do you recommend a top on the gutter? You know, I did a little research on this, and we're not gutter people, but there's just so much. I mean, I love the internet. There's so much out there. You know, anything you want to do, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
But there's probably six or seven versions of gutter calculators.
Yeah.
And it tells you, you know, you figure in what the square footage, the pitch of your roof,
right,
the whole nine yards, and it kind of it tells you what size gutter to use.
Yeah.
But myself, I don't see the need to use one, because every single one of them tells you that if your gutters are running over, maybe you need more downspouts.
Yeah.
So I would recommend to you, if your gutters are in decent shape, maybe you shouldn't be looking to replace them. Maybe you should be looking at putting in that extra downspout in, because really, if you double the downspouts, you double the capacity of your gutter.
Right.
Because your gutter can only move as much water as it can get rid of.
That's correct.
And, you know, if they're pitched right and everything, over the years, you know, I'm sure there's some really, really great gutter guys out there. And so I'm not in any way trying to bash the industry, because, you know, there's good qualified, skilled guys out there. Us as Midwest Basement Systems, we've been asked 1,000 times, do you have a referral for a gutter guy? If you're out there and you're a good gutter guy, give me a call. Let's sit down and talk, because so far in the last 16 years, I've not come up with somebody.
Yeah, you know, I'm asked this a lot when I'm visiting with customers. You know, what size of gutter should I have? You know, and I always, as kind of a rule of thumb, have always said a little bit bigger is always a little bit better.
Right.
3-inch gutters, I have always found that they probably are maxed to their capacity if you have any kind of sizable roof.
And if you're putting in, I mean, I don't know what the price difference is between a 3 and a 4-inch gutter, but what the heck, go for the 4-inch gutter.
Yeah, because that extra inch does like 67% more capacity. I mean, it's just an odd number to realize you're getting over half just with that extra inch. But again, Tim, you're absolutely right. You know, my rule of thumb is always to tell people, hey, you know, a 4-inch is probably, you know, going to be a better option for you. However, there are experts in the industry, and they can do a design for you that's going to work, because you see so many complex roof designs now that once you start, and you know, and how it's laid out, do you have, what kind of a western exposure do you have? Because we know, you know, from the north to the north to the west back down to the south, the way our rain flow comes, you're probably going to be hitting a lot more rain on the western exposure than you are on the east. But that doesn't mean you can minimize on the east side of your rain or of your home either. It doesn't mean put a 4-inch on the west side, put a 3-inch on the east side. You know, and you're right. Adding extra downspouts and getting the drainage far enough away from your home so you're not recycling this,
right,
especially if you do have you know, a waterproofing system. But yeah, you know, I would
and
always
when we say far enough away from a house. What's far enough? I mean, you 5 feet?
No,
maybe. I don't know.
Well, 5 feet if it's a, if you have a positive pitch away from your home, because you know the water's going to flow away.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, the rule of thumb for me has always been, you know, if it's 10 foot, it's, you know, it needs to go just a little bit farther. But it all depends on the layout of your property too.
Yeah.
And the landscaping.
Yep, exactly. You know, 10 feet from your house, where's the water go?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen where people have great pitch away from their house 10 feet, and then all of a sudden it goes around the house, and all of a sudden they got a lake in the
right,
front yard or the backyard or something like
right,
that.
You're right.
Now, on to the subject about toppers. And you know, there's everybody's got their version of this, you know, lid or hat or whatever the heck you want to call it.
Cover.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah, me either.
Okay, I'm just simply not a fan. What happens is most of them work on what's called skin friction. And the skin friction, theoretically, water comes down the roof and it kind of flows over this top. And then it kind of makes the curve and comes back in towards the house and into the gutter. And it works great as long as there's only maybe a quarter of an inch of water an hour. I mean, I don't know what the actual amount of water, but I know if there's too much water, if it's raining too hard, that water just skips right over the top of this.
I had a customer who a beautiful home out west of Des Moines, and he had the gutter covers put on also, not associated with any specific name, but it's the top that goes over the mm-hmm. gutter itself, with the intent, because he had a lot of
foliage. We'll bash an industry but not a company.
But he had a lot of foliage in this area, and he was getting up into the age where he didn't feel comfortable getting up and cleaning the gutters out all the time, so he saw this as an opportunity. Well, with the pitch and size of his home, he said the first time it rained really heavy, he goes, I was looking out my windows, and all of the water was just going down over the gutter. So he goes, it looked like this shower around my house, you know, because nothing was going into the gutter itself. It was just running off. So, you know, he thought, I've got the same problem I did when I had clogged gutters, because the gutters were filling up and then they were just spilling over the sides. Well, now by doing this, he goes, it was like this curtain of water. He goes, because all the water was just bypassing the gutter and just going straight down alongside of his house. So he goes,
that lasted
about 6 weeks, and he took them off. And he spent a couple of grand doing it.
Oh, I mean, they're as much as a gutter.
He was not happy with his purchase based on you know, what he was told his expected results were going to be.
And, you know, I've heard of situations where it actually will draw, I mean, with the water that gets actually drawn into the gutter, it will draw, like, the little helicopter seeds and, you know, other sediment in there. Well, now you've got this thing on there, so you don't have the ability to just clean it out.
Right.
And, you know, then I heard of another company that made one that you could clean out, and it occurred to me, okay, if you got to clean the damn thing out, then obviously it's not doing its job.
So,
I mean, I personally don't know. I'm not a fan, and I'm not going to have them at my house.
No.
So.
No, and that's just it. I typically see the displays at any of the home shows, and you have this trickle of water coming down at a very slow pace, and it's dropping down from maybe 12 to 18 inches, which is not a fair representation of the water that's coming down a 25, 30-foot pitch, you know, on your roofline. You know, this gravity is going to pull that water down, and, you know, it's going to get some speed because it's getting volume. And so,
you know what I think you need to do? Anytime there's a product like this that you want to use at your home, you should always try to find the dirt on it. It's like when we have a guest on this show. I mean, we get on the internet, we try to find the dirt.
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with this company? Why shouldn't we have them on the show? It's easier to find that a lot of times than it is to find the good stuff. Because really, And I'm not saying that if you find a complaint on a company on the internet that you shouldn't hire the company, because right. I have a theory about this. There's only two kind of people that report. Yeah. It's the ones that are just ecstatically happy.
Yeah.
You know, that just they would just move in at that company if they could, you know.
Right.
And there's the ones that are mad.
Yeah.
And
that there's no pleasing no matter what.
There's no
you
pleasing
do.
No matter what. And I'm not saying there's not legitimate complaints out there, but you know, when I hire a contractor at my home, I really try to find the bad stuff, but I've been burned, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even since we've been doing this show, and since we wrote the Ten Commandments of hiring a contractor, and I follow it, and I'm still getting burned. So you know, it's horrible to
it
hire
can
a contractor,
happen, but the risk level should be a lot lower.
Incidentally, now just the other day, and Rod, you were up at my house with me, and saw this to be true. I had some trim work done at my house. Mm-hmm. I'm no trim carpenter, never professed to be, and. So we had replaced the floors in our home,
mm-hmm.
and myself and one of the guys that works at Midwest Basement Systems, who used to be a floor layer,
mm-hmm.
you know, we got this done and everything. Floor looks great, but in the process, we ruined all the trim. So
sure.
we took the trim off, and I finally had it put back on the other day, and I will bring the information next week on the actual contractor that did it, but it went very smooth. I went over to Gilcrest Jewett, and I purchased the trim work and everything. So the contractor, which I think his name was Doug Hutchinson, he went over, he picked it all up, came over. They were in and out in a day. My wife paid them. And you know my wife.
Yeah.
She doesn't usually do stuff like that. You know, if there's a check to be written, then, you know, Tim better come home and look at your work. And then
make sure.
But she was comfortable enough. They were in and out. They were clean. They cleaned up their mess. And
good.
She paid them. And it was a good, reasonable price. So.
Good. Fantastic.
So,
I always like to hear good stories.
Well,
I mean,
you know, kudos to them. And, you know, this was we don't have a huge house, so it wasn't a very expensive job. So we didn't go through the entire – I mean, it was like $800 or something like that. But so we didn't go through the whole – what I would put you through, you know,
right.
if you actually came to my house to put a driveway in it. We didn't have a written contract or anything. He gave
right.
me kind of a verbal estimate, and I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, come over,
yeah,
put it in. And then he came over, put it in, and it ended up to be less money, and, you know, so that was
very happy.
Cool.
Well, good. I mean, like I say, and that's you know, part of our Ten Commandments is, you know, folks, if you're having a job done and they did what you asked them to do and maybe
right.
even a little bit more, report on them. Tell, you know, say, hey, listen, do a review. Google review is a great way to let people know that there's a good contractor out there.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that, you know, you just look at a Google review and say, ah, I found the guy I need.
Yeah, you still got to do your own due diligence.
Yes.
That's like me giving you a stock tip.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're just going out and spending all your life savings on this stock. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, do your own research. Just because I had a good experience with this guy.
That's right.
Does not mean that you would, but.
But it gives a leg up to this guy to know that customers are happy with him.
Yeah.
And that's what we, you know, we as a contractor want also.
Yeah, he's got something to be proud of.
Good.
So, anyways, we got to be going to another break. We'll be right back with more Around the House. All righty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and we're talking about comments and questions that people have sent in to us. And again, we really appreciate that. And if you want to send us more, just go to MidwestBasementSystems.com. And go to the About Us section, the radio show, and you can leave a comment right there.
Right.
So,
what do you got, Rod? How often should I check or change the check valve on my sump pump?
Annually. You know what? I am pretty adamant about this kind of thing because I've seen people with, you know, what looks to be a $100,000 finish job, just
mm-hmm.
a beautiful finish job. And spared no expense. Nice home theater system, pool table, great furniture, floor coverings, wall. Just, you could tell, you know, they had spent, this was somebody's lifelong dream.
Yeah.
You go in the other room and look at the sump pump, and you've got a 20-year-old pump that they're bragging still works.
Yeah.
When it, for just maybe a couple few hundred bucks, they could have brand new equipment. That,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Battery,
I've seen this 100 times.
A battery backup, a new check valve. How many times have you gone and looked at something you know was a homeowner installed, the check valve is installed wrong?
Yep.
They're, you know, I mean, most of these should be in a vertical position. You know, I've seen them laying sideways.
And there's usually an arrow that tells you which direction, and they will not flow backwards.
Yeah.
If you don't know what a check valve is, a check valve is it's just a little flapper valve that
right.
goes in the line and is designed to not let the water come down into the house.
Right.
From the pipe. You know,
right.
once the water's pumped out of the sump pump, that's it. It's gone.
Yeah. And there's some that have float balls in them. There's a few different types, you know, the ones that when the pump is actuated and pumping the water, it flows by and puts the float ball up. And then once the pump shuts off, the weight of the water seats the ball
mm-hmm.
again. Well, guess what? And like you said, annually, there's silt and sediment in that water
yep.
that's going to fall back down from the pipe after the pump stopped pumping, and it's going to sit on that ball or it's going to sit on that flapper valve. Now, what happens is continuous use of that is going to build up some residual film, and now it's going to start leaking. Or if there's rocks, pea gravel, things like that that float back up, they can actually stop the flapper valve from actually opening all the way or plug it completely. So, you know, you're right. Changing these things on an annual basis is so important, and just to the operation of a simple sump pump.
Right. What if I asked you you have a fairly new truck. What if I asked you to drive that truck 100,000 miles without checking the oil?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what's going on.
Yep.
You know, and there's usually more at stake. If you're unhappy with your car, you just go sell your car.
Right.
If you're unhappy with your basement now because it's flooded, it doesn't make any difference. You still got a flooded basement you
yeah.
got to deal with.
You're going to have to fix it before you try and sell it.
But right. And there's just a huge industry that's crept up over the last how many years with this disaster restoration.
Yeah.
And, you know, fire, water, you know.
Absolutely.
These things that, you know, for the price of a sump pump, for the price of a check valve.
No.
I don't see the point.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, you know, sump pumps are not an expensive replacement, and especially check valves. Check valves and the system should be serviced. I mean, it should be serviced by a technician that knows what he's doing. You know, obviously, you can give us a call. Even if you didn't have us install it, give our service department a call, you know, at 289-1606. We'd be more than happy to come over
yeah.
and perform a service
it's
on
not
your sump
expensive
system.
At all.
No, not at all. So,
okay, I've got a question here. Apparently, this is a well-informed individual because they were listening last week.
All right.
They said, you talked about misdiagnosing foundation problems, and which we did. We spent nearly mm-hmm. the whole show on it. Matter of fact, I wanted to spend this show on it before you said we got to get through some of this other stuff.
Yep.
Is this common? How do I know what to do? How can I be sure? Do you check work done by others? I'm not sure how common this is. It's common enough.
Right.
It happens enough, and we see it. And, you know, a lot of times the unfortunate part is if I come to your house and I say, okay, this problem is going to cost $100,000 to get fixed. Now, that's a big number,
right.
and, you know, our fixes usually aren't
no.
even near that. I'm just picking out numbers here. And then, you know, our producer comes in and he says, you know what, I can fix this for $10,000. Right now, you're seeing $90,000 disconnect.
Right.
And you would much rather, you know, wow, you can really fix this for $10,000? Sure, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe through no fault of his, maybe he misdiagnosed the problem.
Yeah.
And so he's going to come in and do something that is not going to solve the problem.
Right.
Now, later on, you're looking at something where you have to come in and, you know what, we come back in and we say, you know what, yeah, it was a $100,000 fix before, but since this other guy came in here and did what he did, now it's about $110,000
yeah.
because we got to undo what he did, and this stuff takes time and it takes money.
Right.
And this is the kind of thing that we see. People subconsciously in their mind, I mean, who doesn't want to save $90,000?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But usually the number's not this big. I'm just picking out numbers. But if it was $10,000.
Yeah.
Okay. $10,000. Hey, you know what? I got to buy a car for my teenage daughter. For $10,000, I can do that. I can, this is what people are equating
right.
things to instead of being sure that they're fixing stuff right. The second part of the question here, no. Midwest Basement Systems does not come in and check other people's work unless there is an additional problem that we're going to come in and bid to fix. I personally think that there are companies out there that do that. personally, I think that there's character and ethical flaws if you find somebody to do that. Because if Rod, if you go out and do a job and then that homeowner calls me and says, Tim, come out and check the, what Rod's doing, there's only one reason I would do that. I'm not going to do that because I'm just a great guy. I'm going to do that because I want the work. And I'm going to come out and say, you know what, Rod is not doing this right. He's not using the right materials or anything else. If you'd have hired me, you know what I would do, Mr. Homeowner? I would throw Rod off your project and I would hire me.
Yeah. Well,
I am not going to be in that situation.
You know, I'm chuckling over here because we've been asked to do that. We're being asked to do that. When questioned about why, it's because, well, I heard you guys do a really good job, so you would know whether or not this guy is doing the right work.
Yeah, well, and then the next obvious question, well, okay, I understand. And that's flattering. I appreciate that.
Why didn't you hire us?
You know?
Well, you know.
Well, they could get here sooner, or they were $10,000 cheaper or whatever. Yeah. Well, okay, and you as a homeowner, I can respect you, and
we had a call one time just asking us to go up while this other company was there just to check on their work to see if they were doing it right.
Yeah,
we're like, thank you for the compliment that we probably know what we're doing. However,
we're not coming over.
That's right. Yeah, or you made the choice to go with this company.
Here's a few tips, and we don't have much time left, so I'll try to get through these. The Ten Commandments for Hiring a Contractor. They're right on our website, MidwestBasementSystems.com. Go to the About Us section and hiring a contractor. I think that's what it says. I'm not sure. Follow these 10 steps. They're important. Yeah. The bigger the numbers are, the more important these steps become. Proof.
Yeah.
Okay, proof. If I come to your house, Rod, and I want you to spend $100,000 with my company, I better be able to prove what I'm talking about, that I know what I'm talking about, that what's happening, I say is happening and is actually happening.
Right.
And I'm not going to go through all the steps that we use to prove this, to prove what we're saying, but you can't get this kind of information from a weekend course, okay?
Yeah.
There is no online courses where you just take a course. We've been at this for 20-plus years, man, and it takes a lot of time. My brother runs our production department at Midwest Basement Systems, and right now we could have 10 crews out fixing homes if we wanted.
Right.
But it's tough to train a guy. All of our production people are trained.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say they've been in it for 20 years, but they've been in it for a good long time.
Yeah.
And
there's a level of expertise that has to be achieved before you would turn a crew or a foreman loose to say, okay, you know what the repair is, now do it.
Yeah, what if it's done wrong? I mean, I can't take that risk.
Right.
Don't automatically go for cheap. This is the number one cause of people getting their foundation problems fixed wrong.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where I say this to my customers because there's nothing more true than this. A warranty does not overcome logic. You can't just have somebody. I was talking to a customer the other day about, they were talking about having some repairs done. And I said, even if it was the type of repair that we did, I would not recommend it because it leaves you at such risk. And she goes, the customer was talking to me. She goes, well, you know what? He kept saying it was going to be a lifetime warranty. And I started questioning about it. And I said, did it make sense to you that the type of repair that he was going to do was not serviceable? And she goes, well, that's what we talked about after he left. And I said, now do you understand? You can tout these kind of repairs, but if they're not going to be serviceable or they're not going to be able to be warranted and worked on, then it's not a warranty issue. You're not going you're going to have to do the whole system all over again.
This is really, really a great question that this homeowner sent in. And I guess the logic thing, sometimes you just got to go back and, you have to put price aside.
Yeah.
And, I've heard you say this 1,000 times, Rod, if price was no object, would this be the logical way to go?
Right.
And of course you get a lot more yeses than you would have. But the fact of the matter is, that's the question. Anyways, if you need to get a hold of us, just give us a call, 1-800-556-5697.
Locally in the Des Moines area, 515-289-1606.
Or just come on in, 5153 Northeast 17th Street. And as everybody says, because I say it, never hire a contractor you can't find.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest thing. You're going to spend 100 grand with a guy you can't find?
Yeah.
So we'll talk to you next week.